Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into a term that's really making waves in social care and occupational therapy right now, single-handed care.
That's right.
Now, at first glance, you know, you might think that sounds pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where it gets, well, really interesting. This phrase, it sounds simple, but it's actually an idiom.
It is.
And it's packed with some pretty big implications for how we approach care. Especially, you know, for our aging population.
Absolutely. And our mission, really, for this deep dive is to unpack exactly what single-handed care truly means.
Okay.
Why it's become so vital and how it impacts not just the individuals getting care, but the whole system.
The whole system, yeah.
We're going to look at the big demographic shifts, the undeniable financial pressures driving this change, and maybe some surprising personal benefits, too.
Okay. So as we dive in, here's a question maybe for you to think about.
Hmm.
What if providing less direct hands-on care actually led to more independence, more dignity?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a bit counterintuitive, doesn't
it? Yeah, it really does.
Let's unpack that idea.
Yeah, it does sound backwards, but that's sort of the heart of it. When we talk about single-handed care, it's not like a literal definition, one person doing everything.
Right.
It's an idiom. It means we're taking a care package that, you know, traditionally needed two carers.
Okay.
And strategically, thoughtfully reducing it down to just one.
So a deliberate shift.
Yeah.
Two carers down to one. That feels like quite a big a philosophical jump in how we think about care.
It is.
What's pushing this change right now?
Well, the numbers, they paint a pretty stark picture. Think about this. Back in October 2020, the Health Foundation estimated England would need an extra £2.1 billion for social care by 2023-24.
£2.1 billion.
Billion. And get this, that wasn't even to improve services.
No.
No, just to keep pace with the expected growth and demand. Just to stand still.
Wow, just to stand still. That sounds like a system already under serious strain.
Mm-hmm.
What does that kind of financial pressure force us to rethink?
It forces a pretty profound reevaluation. And that demand, it's overwhelmingly driven by our aging population. Age UK's 2019 report had some, frankly, staggering figures for the UK. Roughly 12 million people over 65.
12 million.
Then 5.4 million over 75, 1.6 million over 85, and over 500,000 who are over 90.
Goodness.
We even have more than 14,000 centenarians.
Those numbers alone are quite something. But what about the future? The projections? Because it sounds like this isn't slowing down.
Not at all. By 2030, projections suggest 1 in 5 people in the UK will be 65 or older.
1 in 5.
But here's the really startling statistic. This is from Wittenberg, Hugh, and Hancock between now and 2070.
Okay.
The percentage of people over 65 needing help with at least one everyday task, like cooking, cleaning, it's projected to jump by 116%.
116%. That's huge.
It could mean up to 7 million people over 65 needing home care.
Right. So we're facing this aging population, a massive surge in the need for care, and these colossal financial pressures. It really does feel like a perfect storm brewing.
It does.
Is this where single-handed care comes in as maybe a key part of the solution?
Precisely. Historically, if someone was seen as a high risk of falls or showed what used to be called challenging behaviors,
okay,
which, and this is a really crucial note, that's an outdated term now. We understand it better as unmet needs.
Right. Important distinction.
Or if they used complex moving and handling kit, the standard practice was almost always assigned two carers.
Okay.
The reason given. Usually safety reasons or legal reasons.
And, you know, from a common sense angle, that feels logical. If someone's frail or uses a hoist, your first thought is maximum safety.
Absolutely.
So where does the thinking start to shift?
The shift happens when we start to really question if logical is actually optimal. Take someone medically fit for discharge from hospital, right? But maybe they're inconsistent with standing up or walking to the loo.
Okay.
The fear is they fall at home, end up right back in hospital. So the easy answer seems to be two carers for extra support.
Right. Sounds straightforward.
Or someone who's had a fall, spends weeks in hospital, now needs a hoist for all transfers. Best practice says get them home, sure, but if they need a hoist, well, they need two carers, don't they? That's the traditional thought.
It sounds like that approach, while not necessarily wrong, maybe isn't always the best approach.
Yeah.
For the person or for the system?
Exactly.
Because having two carers for every single call, that essentially doubles your cost right away. and it halves your available workforce.
Precisely.
For health systems already struggling, that's a huge drain on resources.
It is. From a system view, if you strategically reduce a care package from two carers to one, you've basically doubled your workforce capacity and saved money.
A win-win on paper.
Right. But the real shift, the really transformative part, is when we look at it from the perspective of the person actually receiving the care.
Ah, yes. This is where the stats and the money talk gets a human face, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Our source material shares a really powerful personal story. An occupational therapist's own aunt, Gladys, 91 years old, living with Alzheimer's dementia.
It's an incredible story.
It really made me rethink my own assumptions about what good care actually looks like.
It's a fantastic illustration. It highlights that when you have two carers present, there's a much higher chance they end up doing for the person instead of doing with them.
Right. Taking over rather than assisting.
Exactly. In Gladys's case, even though she had moving and handling equipment that traditional agencies would instantly say requires two carers for health and safety.
The default setting again.
Her occupational therapist niece strongly argued for just one consistent carer.
And what happened? What were the results? They sound pretty striking.
They were. The author points out that Gladys, when she was in care homes with two carers, often lost skills.
Lost skills? How?
Because the carers were doing things to her, not with her. She'd apparently need a month of intense rehab just to get back to her baseline after only a two-week respite stay.
Wow. That really shows how safety, ironically, can sometimes lead to a loss of independence, loss of ability.
It's a profound insight, isn't it, into those unintended consequences of just applying blanket safety policies. The author even moved away from traditional care agencies altogether and decided to train private carers herself.
Why was that?
Because the adequate training the agencies provided just wasn't enough for Gladys's complex, changing needs. They needed carers who really understood how to help Gladys thrive, not just keep her safe.
So with this move to one consistent carer, what were the tangible changes for Gladys? What did this approach actually unlock in her daily life?
The benefits were huge, really personal. Having one consistent carer maximized her independence because it encouraged her to actively participate in her own care.
How so?
Well, imagine, even something simple like lifting a top over her head twice a day for dressing. That becomes an opportunity to practice movements, build strength, keep her joints mobile.
Ah, I see. Little bits of rehab built into the routine.
Exactly. And she developed healthier, more trusting relationships with those consistent carers. That's absolutely crucial for someone with cognitive decline.
That consistency does sound vital. If you have different people coming in and out all the time, it must be much harder for them to really get the nuances, you know, a good day versus a bad day, or build that essential trust.
Absolutely critical. The author's personal experience showed that one carer for Gladys resulted in a dramatically better quality of life for both Gladys and the author, actually.
Right.
It led to more personalized care, more dignity, and it maintained her physical strength over the years.
That's amazing.
And there was more. Better social engagement, stronger mutual respect, more choice and control over her day, and significantly fewer hospital admissions.
Fewer admissions, too.
Yes. In fact, the author flat out says that if they'd stuck with a two-carer agency, Gladys would undoubtedly have ended up in hospital as her condition worsened.
So this really isn't just about efficiency or saving money. It's fundamentally about human dignity and a much better quality of life.
Precisely.
But what about the carers? You mentioned training private carers. Did this single-handed care model offer them any benefits?
Yes, the source suggests it did. Carers who were skilled in providing single-handed care reported significantly more job satisfaction.
Really? Why is that?
Well, they experienced fewer frustrations that often come with two-carer calls, like, you know, waiting around for a colleague who might be late or not knowing who you'll be working with that day.
Ah, okay, more autonomy.
Exactly. It gave them more autonomy and, it seems, a deeper connection to the individuals they were caring for.
So it's not just a cost-cutting exercise for the system. It genuinely sounds like a paradigm shift that can benefit everyone involved. The person gets more independence, more dignity, the system becomes more efficient, and the carers feel more empowered and satisfied in their jobs.
That's the potential, yes. And what's really fascinating here is realizing that moving and handling isn't static. It's not fixed. New equipment, new techniques, they're constantly evolving. As an industry, we have this profound responsibility to future generations of older adults. We need to ensure our services have the right skills and knowledge to deliver care that genuinely improves quality of life, not just defaulting to what's perceived as the safer option,
right?
Which, as we've seen with Gladys's story, can often strip away skills from both the person receiving care and the carer providing it.
That brings up a really important question for the future, then. If this approach, single-handed care, is so beneficial, why isn't it already universal?
That's a great question.
The source suggests that maybe, in the future, the term single-handed care might not even exist anymore, perhaps replaced by something like an individualized, smarter care approach.
That's the hope, I think. That's the vision. The idea is that needing more than one carer for, quote-unquote, complex issues should become the exception.
Not the default norm.
Exactly. Not the default. It's about fundamentally reassessing what's truly important to the individual person and focusing relentlessly on promoting their maximum independence and their quality of life.
This whole deep dive, it really has been about challenging assumptions, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly around what we actually mean by safety and efficiency in care.
Mm.
We've seen how this strategic shift from two carers to one, driven by demographic changes and financial pressures, it isn't just a budget fix.
Not at all.
It's a profound reevaluation of what truly benefits a person receiving care, fostering much greater independence and dignity.
Absolutely. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this kind of individualized, smarter care approach, it isn't just relevant in the care setting, is it?
No.
It really asks us all to examine how we define safety, how we define support, and how those definitions ultimately affect an individual's autonomy in all parts of life, really.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Here's a final thought to maybe mull over. If rethinking safety in care can unlock so much more independence and quality of life, where else in our lives might we be sacrificing personal capability, personal growth, for perceived blanket safety?
That's a powerful question.
And what profound opportunities might we be missing as a result? Something to think about.